Welcome to Disrespect, exploring the stigma around disability, providing information and interviews to entertain and challenge listeners who care about, or care for, or may themselves have become someone with a disability. We welcome today Madhavi Reddy, the project coordinator for the Hamilton Tenant Helpline. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What interested me was your question on housing to the federal candidates. I don't think many voters connect federal politics with housing, and yet your agency was established with federal funds, right?
Yes.
What's the time frame of that funding?
The funding we received was from April until March 31st of this year, so April 2005 to March 31st, 2006.
And you got the office up and running in October.
Yes, there's a project background, so the larger project is the tenant education project. And the tenant education project started the Hamilton Tenant Helpline, and we launched in October.
Okay. What happens in March? There's no more Skippy funding coming for March that we know of, is there?
We're not sure. So we've been told to just apply to a few different places. So there are some funding applications in. But we've designed the helpline as best as we can to be somewhat sustainable. So we really realized that we designed the project to be broadly promotable, did some branding around the logo to fill in a gap that maybe other agencies can't fulfill, that outreach service. So we had to really keep in mind the way we set it up, what would happen when the funding runs out.
Well, we know who funds the legal clinic is the province, and I'm not surprised that the clinics as a result need help in dealing with the province. It's a tough job to bite the hand that feeds you, and that is their funder, and that is their job.
Yeah, fair enough.
What does the helpline do that the Housing Help Center doesn't do? Can you explain how the two might be complementary?
Yep. What the helpline was designed to do was basically be an entry point into a housing system, because there still remains tons and tons of tenants in the city who don't really understand like what the process is for eviction, don't know how to deal with maintenance, don't even know if an eviction is legal or what's illegal. Mm-hmm. So as a tenant rights project, we designed it to fill a gap that we thought was there in terms of outreach.
You've been up since October. Have you found that some problems outweigh other problems that tenants are having?
Yeah, I suspect it's probably similar issues across the country. So we found is that for eviction, projects like ours are really important because it's time specific.
How time specific?
The way the law is written is that if a tenant has received an eviction notice, they have 5 calendar days to dispute that eviction notice at the tribunal.
So how is it deemed that they have received it? Are they registered?
The law dictates how they can receive it, and so you can receive it under the door, giving it to someone in the housing unit that appears to be an adult, faxing it to someone's workplace or home place, delivering it to where they get mail, or handing it to the tenant in person. And so no one has to sign saying that they've received that actual notice.
So in fact, a tenant taking care of a sick relative, for instance, could get a notice under the door. And if they weren't in the apartment, it could be evicted before they come back to collect their mail.
Exactly. And it actually, there's a few cases where tenants have been on vacation, or they've been sick in hospital themselves, or even incarcerated, and they've lost their housing, because the whole thing can happen without a tenant even being there. So the 5-day dispute period is really important, and it's important to know that it's a calendar day. So it includes weekends and holidays. So many of our favorite landlords in the city like to give eviction notices on a Friday night. So Saturday and Sunday count as the first 2 days mm-hmm. of that 5-day dispute period. So what happens if you don't challenge it? Your hearing date mm-hmm. is canceled, mm-hmm. and the Ontario Rental Housing Tribunal effectively believes that your landlord is telling the whole truth.
Oh, so it has to be an ostensibly valid ground, whether it's true or not.
Well, it's mostly arrears, so owing money. So they just assume, without you being at the hearing, that you owe the money. And then the most important thing is you won't get a chance to repay the money. If you go through the whole process, there's a little bit of time that you can repay. But if you don't dispute and the hearing is held without you and you lose, the sheriff could show up without you having participated in the process at all. And it's not a very rare thing to happen, because people don't really understand that when they're reading the complicated form that there is, or sometimes some tricky landlords don't give you the dispute form with your application to evict a tenant, you're supposed to get a dispute form with it.
Oh, okay.
Or that somehow the 5 calendar days that escapes people, so the weekend and the holidays, because people think, oh, it's the government, you don't have to, the weekend doesn't really count.
Have there been any reprisals against landlords for this kind of treatment? I would think that someone who's going to end up on the street with their kids might be a little distraught.
Very recently, there was an adjudicator at the tribunal who accepted an appeal from a single mother, I think Scarborough or Brampton, when she appealed, because there's an appeal process. So if you miss your hearing, there's an appeal process. It's kind of rare that you get that appeal, because even it's sort of been decided that jail or hospitalization or vacation isn't a good enough reason for not filing your 5-day dispute.
Okay.
So a single mother disputed anyway, and they just ordered a ruling saying that that was discriminatory against people who didn't have enough time. So the 5-day dispute, it was set aside for her.
Mm-hmm.
So now I personally am in the process of figuring out whether that's precedent setting.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to have to consult with my project partners to see how that'll affect other tenants who have the same problem.
I guess it's not your job to challenge this law.
We're not opposed to doing that sort of action. That more comes from other housing advocates, so a group like SHAC, who actually put together the proposal to start the tenant education project. They might do some work around that.
Mm-hmm. The federal candidates responded to a question you asked in The Spectator. And I understand from you that The Spectator submitted the full question to the candidates, but didn't submit it to the public when they published the answers. What was the question that you asked?
The question had a little bit of a preamble to it.
Mm-hmm.
So the question was, for the poorest members of our community, affordable rental housing is often out of reach. Although the vacancy rate has increased recently, for low-income tenants, the private market remains unaffordable. Rents have risen dramatically, while situations of homelessness and visits to food banks have skyrocketed in recent years. Now with the rising energy costs, many tenants who are holding on fear the situation will become untenable. What will you do to help Hamilton's tenants obtain and retain safe, accessible, and affordable housing? So that was the whole question.
What is the answers that you were looking for, and how does that relate to the answers that you got? Give us a perspective on who understood the question, or who responded to the question, and what response you were looking for, and what you got.
What we were looking for, and the one thing we did get out of this question, was a commitment to affordable housing. It's not numbers that we haven't seen before. And I guess also the thing that brings up another point is that we didn't really get, and not that we expected it, but there's no indication of what affordable housing is. Does that mean subsidized housing or affordable market rent housing? So they didn't really address that. So when they're saying there's money for affordable housing, it doesn't necessarily mean that it really is affordable for the people who most need affordable housing. So the answer that I didn't expect to get, but I hoped to get, was some sort of indication about income.
Yeah.
So whether it be Ontario Works ODSP income rates to get back the 22% that was cut from OW, or, I mean, we're seeing a small increase in minimum wage, but we didn't really hear anything from any of these people about income. I think the Green Party candidate mentioned poverty.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting that the Conservative candidate concentrated a lot more on the safe. I think he had the strong... the strongest concentration on the safety part of the question.
Really?
So I think...
So how did he see safety as involved with housing?
Well, we asked the question, safe, accessible, and affordable housing. And accessible housing. So no one addressed the accessibility issue, which is a huge issue in housing. So any kind of accessibility...
Nobody even showed any sign that they recognized it as a concern or understood what accessible meant.
No, they didn't even touch on that part of the question. So I'm not sure how much this is this the whole answer? Like, I don't even really know if that's the whole answer.
Oh, I see. You think the answers that they've given may have been edited. Yes.
Well, I don't know. So what's there doesn't mention anything about accessibility. One candidate concentrated a lot on the safety issue. So I think that's, you know, trying to get some attention more on the safety issue than others did.
So he's seeing housing
as a product of returning gas taxes to the community, and that this is a handle on violent drug and property crimes, or else he's using it as a platform to segue into a stand on violent drug and property crimes and the fact that some areas of affordable housing can be dangerous neighborhoods. So he's in fact saying that he'll address affordable housing through law enforcement, it appears.
So that's part, I guess that's part of the answer, and I guess that's the answer to our safe housing portion of it.
Yeah.
And the reason why we always talk about safe, accessible, and affordable housing, three together.
Yep.
But it's especially important for us recently, if you know, in the Spectator there's been all those stories about Granville Avenue, Oriole Crescent, the housing issues that are going on there, shootings and racial violence. So we thought we definitely needed to concentrate on the safety, keep the safety in the three things we always ask about.
Yeah.
So one candidate, I guess, had a longer answer about safety and increasing policing budgets.
This was the conservative.
Yes. Yeah. The thing that stood out the most, I think, was nobody really mentioned accessibility, and then some concentration on safety.
And then the Green Party dealt with poverty, but only sort of quickly once over.
Yeah.
The Green Party doesn't seem to link crime to law enforcement in the same way that the conservatives do.
Yeah. And the Green Party candidate's answer in the end, where he talks about providing subsidies to private developers to avoid a concentration of, how did he put it, lessen gentrification. I thought that was interesting. You don't hear that very often. So that was a bit of a different answer. But
oh, I see. Subsidize private developers to include a percentage of affordable housing in their projects.
Yes.
To increase inclusion and lessen gentrification of neighborhoods. Well, that's already actually been tried in Hamilton in the mixed income housing model. It's been proven to work. If you mix market and subsidy housing, you tend to get a safer environment, especially with aggressive management of these projects. Make sure that the subsidy units are not misused as drug depots or pads for prostitution.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought
it sounds
that
workable.
Was interesting because no one else seems to really want to talk about that, I guess.
It's funny because the NDP candidate, David Christofferson, started the Pioneer Project. He has spoken of a 10-year national housing program and co-op units, which are, by definition, mixed income units. So
yeah,
he's addressed it.
Okay,
he's addressed it indirectly, but undeniably. What do we have from the Liberals?
$2 billion they've already, yep.
Past record, yeah.
Another $1.6 billion over 2 years for investment in affordable housing.
National consultation process, new housing framework, government guide, future housing investments. That sounds like the next election to me.
As someone who deals with tenants in crisis, what was your viewpoint on the four responses to your question? Which is going to produce less crisis?
A lot of crisis surrounds maintenance.
Yeah.
But, I mean, most crisis situations involve families or single people about to lose their housing because there's no money, because they don't earn enough money or rents are skyrocketing, rents are increasing.
Yeah.
I think the stat is that it was 16.4% between 1998 and 2005 that rents increased in Hamilton. When vacancy decontrol came into effect, when the law changed, 98 to 2004.
16.4%.
Yeah. So rents increase, and that leaves people less choice about where to go. So I think what really will help tenants is to reconsider vacancy decontrol. People need a raise in income, whatever the source of income may be, and there needs to be more affordable housing, but I think there needs to be a discussion on what affordable means to our different levels of government.
Yeah.
For someone who's looking to cast a vote, should they be looking for the party who's going to put the most money into housing, or is it equally important what way they want to put the money into housing?
I think it's equally important what way they want to put the money into housing.
And what way do you think would be most advantageous?
I think that it would be the affordable housing, which is everyone is talking about, would be really advantageous to tenants, but it has to be affordable to everyone. Like, we were just discussing that, what does affordable mean?
Yeah.
Affordability for me is different than a family of four living on Ontario Works housing shelter allowance.
That's right.
So they need to really, I guess, decide who the target market is and then decide what affordability means. I mean, real affordability would be really beneficial to build more units that are at the lower end of the rent scale, that are safe.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of tenants living in very unsafe conditions because they can't afford to move into better units.
Yeah.
So the money needs to be spent, I guess, on building affordable, more affordable housing that's actually affordable to people who can't afford anywhere near market rent.
So more housing in the ground and more for subsidy?
Yeah. If housing is affordable for 1 year and the law doesn't change, which is a really a provincial government thing, mm-hmm. and the rent keeps rising, it started off as affordable.
Yeah.
And then people's incomes don't change. So it's a whole bunch of things I think are sort of combined.
Do you want to go through those for us?
Well, and I keep harping on the income issue, but it's definitely an income issue. For people on Ontario Works and ODSP, an increase in the shelter allowance would be really good.
Yeah.
There's a few sources to find what the shelter allowance is and comparing that to average market rents, which
right.
I have somewhere in here if you are interested in
sure,
taking
sure,
a look.
Yeah.
This is from a social planning and research.
Oh, here we go.
Yes.
Single person on Ontario Works in Hamilton, the maximum monthly shelter allowance is about $150 less than the average market rent. The maximum monthly shelter allowance for a person who has qualified for Ontario disability support, as opposed to a disabled person who may still be on Ontario Works. The single person on Ontario Works, it's assumed they live in a bachelor. The person on Ontario disability support, it's assumed they live in a one bedroom. Perhaps because of the space requirements and mobility needs and the fact that most accessible apartments are one bedrooms,
yeah.
It's about $180 short of the average market rent, the $414 for the disabled person. The single parent with two children, the gap is about $165, and a couple with two children, the gap is just over $100. It seems to be a punitive component of this for single parents. I noticed the couple with two children have a $100 shortfall, and the single parent with two children have a shortfall of about $170 for the same two-bedroom apartment. Why would the shelter allowance be different when the need for shelter and the price for shelter is the same?
I guess that's a very good question that we should ask.
Yeah. Well, Roulam Durr, the former social worker and social justice writer from Valmont, Quebec, feels people are disapproving of single parents having sex, children being the proof of having had sex, and feel that this should be discouraged. And while they don't come out and say it, they've expressed it very clearly in the money that they're going to allow the parents, and not to forget the children, to
yep.
survive. Those are interesting figures, and those are from the Social Planning and Research Council.
Yes.
And now for a short break from our interview.
I can't take it anymore. Oh, my love for you is gone. Time is passing. Now I'm walking right out of that door. Your love is cold. Girl, I can't take it no more. In my mind, you are gone, leaving me all alone. Loving you don't make it right, even if it's in the middle of the night. Your love is cold, I can't take it no more. I don't love you no more. I'm afraid you might take my soul. Wrap it up in a paper bag and give it to someone as a drag. Your love is so cold, girl, I can't take it no more. I can't stand anymore. I'm afraid you might take my soul. Your love is so cold, I can't take it no more. I can't take it no more. Oh, my love for you is gone. I feel time passing. Now I'm walking right out of that door. Your love is so cold, girl. I can't take it no more.
And now, return to our interview. Are there any other issues surrounding affordability of housing that you want to bring out?
One thing that I think is another thing that I just thought of that's missing from all candidates' answers is supports to maintain housing. There's plenty of people who need supports to maintain their housing, whether it's mental health issue or any health issue or transitional housing for people who just can't, like newcomers or people fleeing like wife abuse or domestic violence, that there needs to be more to maintain housing, because a lot of things happen when people don't understand and it's very quick. We were talking about the five-day dispute.
Yeah.
That applies to almost every type of housing that's covered by the Tenant Protection Act, that five-day dispute. I think that the stat is that the tribunal handles 50% of all court activity in Ontario. And there's a lot of, they don't really release public stats. They've done it once in 2000, and I think the year 2000. There's been some legal clinic analysis of that. And basically what they found is that tenants are at a real disadvantage when they try to go to the tribunal, because they adopt a customer service perspective, and it costs a landlord $150 to file, mm-hmm. and a tenant $45 to file. Mm-hmm. So an analysis of the 1 year of public stats basically shows that landlords' issues are handled very efficiently, and tenants wait a long time for their maintenance reviews or anything. But tenants can get evicted with 17 days beginning to end.
Right.
Yeah.
But not while it's under, not while they're waiting for a hearing.
No, no. So, but the hearing dates happen pretty quickly.
Okay.
Like, it's not like you'll wait, you know, it's like a doctor's appointment. You don't wait 3 months to get a hearing. The landlord will get a hearing date pretty quickly at the tribunal.
Oh,
so
okay.
It's complicated and a bit problematic that, I mean, some of the folks in all the legal clinics, you know, refer to the tribunal as the eviction machine.
Yeah.
It's in some of their reports. They call it an eviction machine. It's a hard thing for tenant to be up against.
What can people do to further their housing interests in this election?
I think that tenants really are viewed as a population that doesn't vote. And traditionally, it is a population that doesn't vote and or make a lot of noise.
They've probably been politicized by laws like this, though, haven't they?
Maybe some places, but I haven't seen, I mean, as I can speak for Hamilton, I haven't really seen that, and I haven't seen an awareness. I've seen that people still think the old law applies. All these urban legends about housing, you can't be evicted in the winter, which is not true, or you can withhold your rent for repairs, which are all things in the old law, which changed in 1998.
Yeah.
So there's just not a lot of
awareness of the new law.
Awareness, I think it's one of those issues that people are proactive when it really affects them. Like, they have to learn it when they live it, which is a lot, like a lot of other things. So there hasn't been... there's been a lot of effort in Hamilton to do some tenant organizing, but it's been a bit difficult to get tenants out because, I mean, the thing we have to understand is that a lot of tenants are literally terrified because their landlords or superintendents have keys to where they live.
Right.
So they feel unsafe in their efforts to even...
Well, in fact, the law prevents the tenant from...
From changing the lock.
Changing the lock.
Yeah.
So, is that an evictable sort of offense? If you change your lock, can you be evicted?
I don't see...
You haven't encountered anybody.
No, and I don't see that the tribunal would evict you, but the tribunal could order the tenant to change the lock back or provide the landlord with a key.
Right.
Yeah. So...
Well, whereupon the tenant, could, if they could afford it, could change the lock again.
Yes, and then have to go back to the tribunal.
Yeah.
Like, it could happen over and over. Yeah.
Yeah.
So people are a bit nervous. So I think that it's... I mean, to further the interests of tenants, I think tenants have to... I don't know. I don't want to say be brave or sounds a bit cheesy, but I think,
look,
you know,
inside
they have to,
themselves for the for the risks and benefits.
Yeah, and I think on the side of the people who do work, the fine folks in Hamilton who do all that work with tenants and see tenants every day, I think there has to be a push to do some tenant organizing.
Yeah.
There's been some efforts in the past. We also have very few tenants associations in Hamilton compared to other cities of the size. So I think it's time to do some tenant organizing, a lot of tenant education, There was a campaign that started during the last, I think it was municipal election, called I'm a Tenant and I Vote. Oh, so,
really?
Yes.
Who was behind that?
I believe it was the solution. I believe it was SHAC, the Solutions for Housing Action Committee.
How can we reach them? Do you know? Are they in the book?
Well, they're a coalition of concerned housing advocates, so you can talk to people who are involved in the project. I'm not actually sure who the specific public contact is, but social planning and research is involved. Housing Help Center is involved. The three community legal clinics are involved. Of course, tenants are involved. Everything we do, we make sure there's tenants.
All right.
Many of us ourselves are tenants ourselves. So I'm not actually sure. So that's our website, that Tenant Education Project.
All right. So you're at www.hamiltontenant.ca.
Yes.
All right. Well, thanks for coming in today.
You're welcome.
All right.
Hold on, baby. Hold on tight. I'm coming in on the midnight flight. Riding across the country in my Cadillac. Girl, you got just what I like. I'm going to ride it all night long. Girl, you know I'm driving home. Going down the highway 110. I can't wait to see my baby again. Accelerate to 115. I can't be late, cause she my queen. Speed it up, I got my radio on. Boys, you know I'm driving home. Driving, driving home. Driving, driving home. Yeah, you know I'm driving home. Back to my baby where I belong. Coming down the street, got my high beams on. No, you know I'm driving home. Yeah, 130 miles and speeding. She's the one that I've been needing. Only got 100 miles to go till I reach my baby's door. Some poor fool trying to race me on. Boy, you know I'm driving home. Driving, driving home. Driving, driving home. Yeah, you know I'm driving home. My baby where I belong. Cities, 14 towns, gotta keep this pedal down. Speedometer reading 150, I only got 10 miles left to go. We're pulled in the driver, my engine smoking. Know my baby has awoken. CPI, she kissed my lip. Say, hey baby, how was your trip? Fine, I said, I heard the siren moan. Girl, you know it's good to be home. Driving, driving home, I'm driving. Driving home, boys, you know I'm driving home. Back to my baby where I belong. I'm driving, driving home. Driving, driving home. I'm driving, driving home. Yeah, driving, driving home. Boys, you know I'm driving home. Back to my baby where I belong.
Disrespect is looking for the names of politicians who are friendly to people with disabilities and supportive of their goals. You can send us this information at radio.stories@gmail.com. radio.stories@gmail.com. And we'd also like to hear what you want to hear on Disrespect related to disability, discrimination, and equity. radio.stories@gmail.com.
If you're interested in the show, you think you might learn how to do digital editing, send us your name and your email. Again, radio.stories@gmail.com. We're looking for a volunteer editor. Disrespect, we'll be back next week. The show is digitally edited from live telephone and studio interviews.